The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the well-dressed and dapper, Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, can you imagine John Facenda coming back to do another Packer documentary talking about the seaside air of Qualcomm Stadium? We're going to tell you that even though the Army-Navy game doesn't get played for another month, it matters right now. And for the second Tuesday in a row, we're going to tell you that there's not a glass ceiling at the Glass Bowl in Toledo.
So last night, Dave, we got to watch our first real basketball of the new season, obviously with a couple of games on tap, two of them on TV. And we also got to watch a Monday night football game that wasn't a lot of fun if you followed our advice last night. What's your take? First take on a Tuesday.
You know, we've got to go to the Monday night game and talk about that whole aspect of football science. Part of what got us to Philadelphia last night were several different elements that we love coming together. A team with a very good pass rush against a team that doesn't protect the quarterback well. It's a road underdog in front of a Monday night crowd. All of the elements there for sacks, interceptions, your third down and long misplays, some of the things that we go out of our way to look for and find. So what happens last night? Jay Cutler, 32 pass attempts, no sacks. Now, if you had programmed the Bear offensive equation in or the Philadelphia defensive equation in, based on what they'd done season to date, out of 32 passing attempts, you would have anticipated about three, maybe even four sacks. Zero. Excellent game plan by the Bears, anticipating this. I think they did a really good job of Cutler moving around in the pocket to get away from that pass rush, and also Cutler himself making great decisions. Kudos to Chicago, but it also shows you one of the difficulties when you see a strong matchup element that you think you have in play. That's also what the opposing team is focused on the most during the week. They were concerned about the Philly pass rush, and they did something about it. Teddy, outside of sweating the final minute in Arizona, how was your Monday night?
It was fine, but I want to ask you a little bit about the Eagles' defensive game plan here. Because, quite simply, it seems like they have a bunch of cornerbacks who are set up to play press man coverage, and they're playing him in zone. And we saw all these third and long conversions from the Bears last night where they were just finding holes in the zone and sitting down. And you know, the third and 16 stood out to me. But there were a handful of those. Is the scheme for Philly wrong for the talent that they have on hand? It just baffles me.
You know, it might be. There is a little bit of a disconnect. One of the reasons why they go zone is to try to force the quarterback to look downfield and recognize the coverage, which buys you that extra half second for the pass rush. That's part of their intent. It's like, okay, we're going to make you look for the coverage, and that's going to give our defensive ends and our tackles an extra half second to get to you. It didn't work.
No, it sure didn't last night. As for me, obviously, I had Monday Night Football on the one TV, had college hoops on another. And, you know, we talk about a first take. We have to talk about something we talked a little bit about yesterday. We talked about the luck factor at the end of ball games, games that are coin flips. And when you're hot, you win those coin flips. When you're not, you tend to be on the wrong end of those coin flip decisions and not overreacting to what happens at the end of ball games. Well, let's take a look at last night. Certainly in the Arizona-Valparaiso game, where about 3 minutes left in that ball game, Valpo's trailing by 20. With less than 30 seconds in that game, Valpo with a chance to cut the lead to six and a wide open look at a three-pointer. Didn't get it done, but they managed to cover the number, making a nice run late in the ball game. So what happened? They finally started to hit some three-pointers, which were a problem throughout the course of the ballgame. They hit, I believe, three of them in the final couple of minutes. They were able to get some good shots. Arizona kind of laid off defensively a little bit at the end. But the bottom line is that you're going to see games like this on a consistent basis, whether it's NBA, whether it's college hoops, whether it's NFL, whether it's college football. Don't overreact to your wins. Don't overreact to your losses. Keep a level head, whether you're on the right side or wrong side of some of these game late game decisions. And if you're getting involved at all in the live wagering side of the equation, you can really take advantage of some of these late game swings just by paying attention and using the simple market strategy that we talk about all the time, buy low, sell high. Worked last night, whichever team you had, Arizona or Valparaiso, in that late college basketball game. Now let's switch over to Market Watch and talk about the numbers for the two teams that played on Monday Night Football last night. We have Chicago in the -2 at the opener range. They've been bet up -2.5, even -3 in some locations at home against the Detroit Lions this coming weekend. Total in that ball game, 46. Of course, this another rematch. The Lions and Bears met on Monday Night Football a couple of weeks back, and a late goal line stand from Detroit preserved the win and cover. They'd have won either way. They would not have covered had they not gotten that last stop against the Bears. But this time, Chicago, the early favorites. In the other game, we got nothing on Philadelphia, Arizona. We're going to have to wait until later in the week to see the status of Cardinals quarterback Kevin Cobb. Even though Arizona won and covered last week, it's very clear that offense does not work the same way in terms of a downfield passing game when Max Skeleton is in, or Skeletor, or whatever it is. He's rough to watch. And while Kevin Cobb has certainly been a disappointment so far this year with Arizona, he's head and shoulders ahead of where Skeleton's been so far this season. So we're going to have to wait until later in the week till we see a point spread on that particular matchup.
The big news to talk about, though, in our Market Watch segment today, because it will impact the way that we perceive a game coming on Saturday, is going back to the land of my alma mater, good old State College, Pennsylvania, and what's happening with the Jerry Sandusky situation as that unfolds. Latest news right before we came on the air today, Joe Paterno's weekly press conference, scheduled for each Tuesday, has been canceled. It's canceled by the university president, I believe. There may be a little bit of a fear there that they might not be able to necessarily control Paterno in this environment. There are some questions that could be asked that he might have a difficult time answering the way they want them to be answered. So we got a couple of things to deal with here. One is, what happened? What are going to be the long-term ramifications? But let's go immediately to what happens this particular Saturday. There's been a lot of line movement to Nebraska. They've gone as high as 3.5 in some places, having opened far below that. And you know what it takes to push through that 3 threshold. But the first question that comes up is, what is the immediate impact? And Teddy, this is the conundrum. Most of the Penn State players were 7 or 8 years old when Sandusky retired in 99. Talk about distract. Does it really distract the team at all this week?
I think it probably does, Dave. And again, you know, I'm a graduate of the University of Michigan. We had our own scandal where we had to forfeit. Well, I guess we didn't win any championships. We had to forfeit all the wins from the Fab Five era and a couple of almost championships. I know the best team that never won anything, they never won the Big Ten, they never won the NCAA tournament, but they lost really close twice in March Madness. But we forfeited all of that, and it stunk. And the basketball program took probably 10 years to recover from the effects of the allegations and the effects of the sanctions and the effects of obviously vacating all of those wins. And to this day, you know, you won't see Chris Webber in Ann Arbor walking around campus as a persona non grata and all of that, you know, let alone Maurice Taylor and Mateen Cleaves, the guys who actually caused everything to unravel at U of M. But forget it. I'm going on a tangent here. The reality here is that now where you went to school at Penn State, facing similar type of issues. And boy, this isn't going to go away anytime soon. This is going to hang over the head of everybody. Now, the athletic director looks like he's going down. The university president could go down here. And when all said and done, there's no way that Joe Pa can survive this scandal, can he? I mean, and then that has to affect the team.
Here's a question we're going to have about Paterno. And we should say that we've respected few people in sports more than Joe through the years. Spent the best years of our lives in State College, even met Joe and his son at a Penn State-Iowa wrestling match. Oh, gosh, way back, you know, in the early 80s. It doesn't look like he's going to get complicit in the current investigation and what's being talked about elsewhere, saying, okay, in 2002, Mike McQuarrie witnesses something, brings it to Paterno. Paterno then takes it to the athletic director. Part of the problem, though, is he's not supposed to go to the athletic director and report it and say, what do you think we should do? He's supposed to be telling the athletic director what to do. He actually has more power at the university. He's supposed to say, here's what happened. and here's what we do. He should not have passed the buck there, regardless of his relationship with Jerry Sandusky. But here's what no one is talking about. And we've scoured the web for this just to see if it's come up anywhere else. There might be something darker and more disturbing here. Jerry Sandusky retired in 1999 at the age of 55. Now think about how many successful football coaches you've seen anywhere retire at that age. That doesn't happen. What do we see now behind the in part of the grand jury investigations? The first reported incident, 1998. Now connect those dots. Yeah, there's a little supposition here. Yeah, we're sort of playing out there, but we do this every day with box scores and with other elements. And if they add up properly, we have to wonder. Okay, if the first incident is 1998 and Sandusky retires in 99, was he actually forced out? Could they have possibly known at that time that there was something to that 98 incident and he was forced out of the program? Later got hired sort of like an associate professor by the university, was given access to a lot of university facilities, which is going to be a big part of the brouhaha in the days to come, because we are going to see administrators lose their jobs. Not only that, but possibly due time for the cover-ups here. There definitely is perjury involved. But did Paterno know in 1999? Could that have been why Sandusky didn't retire, maybe was forced out?
Oh, yeah, I think it's very real. But I have to ask three quick-hitter questions. Sandusky going to jail, yes or no?
I don't know how you avoid it at this point. I don't know how you avoid jail time.
I'm pretty sure he will as well. Paterno going to be back next year as the Nittany Lions head coach, yes or no?
Regardless of this situation, I don't think he was going to be back. Mm-hmm. I think this was going to be the last year.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, we saw it with Bobby Bowden at Florida State. When you're in one place and one time for that long and have that much success, very, very difficult to maintain that same level of discipline throughout the end of the era. We saw it at Florida State and obviously now seeing it at Penn State. The last question, this is going to affect the Nittany Lions on Saturday. Is this going to be that big of a distraction for the coaching staff and for the players that it's going to affect them on the field?
You know, this is going to sound odd. For all the attention this is getting nationally, remember, as we said earlier, these kids were 7 or 8 years old when Jerry Sandusky retired. These Penn State players don't know him. He has not been a part of their lives or a part of their culture in any way. Here's what these players see. We can be in the Big Ten championship game. If we beat Nebraska, look at where we're at. I don't think it impacts those particular kids. Obviously, it's going to impact Paterno, but he's only a figurehead right now. Yeah, he's not really the head coach at Penn State. Mm-hmm. He's a figurehead. I don't know if it does anything, but you know what could happen towards the end of the week?
No.
As this publicity gets harder and harder, these players are obviously, you know what? Screw you. We like Joe. We came to this university to play for Joe. We respect Joe. We're going to go beat Nebraska. You know, it can actually have a contrary effect on the team.
So kind of the us against the world mentality.
There's a chance as this plays out the way it does, because not that much has been said bad about Paterno so far. We might have said the worst, going back to the 98-99 prospects. That might have been the worst thing he did by forcing the guy out of his job without going to the authorities back at that time. But as the week goes by, if the more publicity goes against Paterno, the more it can inspire those players. Jerry Sandusky means nothing to those players. Joe Paterno does.
Yeah, and Penn State, certainly the better of the two teams on the defensive side of the football. Hey, guys, you've been sending us great questions every day. Please keep them coming. This show is all about you, and we need those questions on a daily basis so we can answer them on air. The email address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. Again, sportsday@covers.com. We have the toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And, of course, active threads and discussions going on right now. Become a part of the covers.com community. Covers.com. Click on forums. When we come back, we're going to delve underneath the sheets, behind the scenes, and give you a nasty little post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Let's start with East Carolina. And you can understand the confusion of East Carolina defensive tackle Antonio Anderson in this picture as he looked up at the scoreboard on Saturday. In the first quarter, Anderson and the rest of the Pirate defense were only on the field for 8 plays. They allowed a grand total of 2 first downs and 0 points. And yet, when time ran out in that first quarter and the teams changed sides of the field, East Carolina was trailing Southern Miss by 2 touchdowns, down 21-7. Defense didn't give up anything. What happened?
We're going to bring this up because one of the biggest mistakes you make, and we know you make it, we read about it, we hear about it, we see the bets that you make, is in misinterpreting games like this. Okay, first let's deal with what happened. In the first quarter, Southern Miss scores an interception return, a punt return, and a blocked punt. There come your 3 touchdowns. They go up 21-7. They get another interception return later in the game, win the game 48-28. So here's the common reaction to a game like this. Well, they didn't play that well. They got lucky. They got some big bounces. That's what led to the scoreboard result. Not their own offense, not their own defensive production. And sometimes you're right when you do that. But you notice when you do that, you also don't win many bets. And we see a lot of people going 50-50 forever trying to use that type of thinking. And we know we'll read it when we look at newsletters that get published this week. When we listen to other people talking on the radio and say, Southern Miss got lucky. They didn't play that well. They shouldn't have won by 20. We're going to adjust that result. But here's one of the first axioms we're going to give you that you need to write down and take this with you forever. If you only adjust the scoreboard down without adjusting the statistics up, you're just running in place. You're not getting anywhere. Here's the problem. When you run an interception back for a touchdown, you don't get the ball. When you run a punt back for a touchdown, you don't get the ball. When you block a punt for a touchdown, you don't get the ball. You're depriving your own offense of opportunities to produce statistics. So yes, you did something good for the scoreboard, but you hurt your box score. So go back and look at that game again, and you'll see that East Carolina had 89 plays. Southern Miss had 56. By scoring the way they did, they deprived their offense of the ball and the opportunity to put stats together. Also, those turnovers coming when they did meant that the offense didn't have to do much. You've got a big lead in the first quarter. You've got a bigger lead at halftime. You're only out there to manage the game. When it's 38-14 in the second half, you manage the game. You don't have to do a whole lot. So you're going to read other people tell you that Southern Miss was lucky. They had 17 first downs. They had 299 yards. They really didn't earn that. And they're wrong when they say that. They might have been able to earn it. They only had 56 plays. They didn't have to do that much. You must adjust the box score in addition to the scoreboard if you're going to be successful. There was a lot going on in San Diego on Sunday. So we were watching the Green Bay Charger game under the microscope. We wanted to see how Phillip Rivers responded from that embarrassment last Monday in Kansas City. I want to see how Mike Tolbert would handle the running back chores when they were all up to him. Could the Chargers get a pass rush without Sean Phillips? And how would Green Bay respond off of a bye, given how sharp that Packer rhythm was going in? We thought the time off might have hurt. So when we look at all those various elements, there was a lot of intrigue. We even talked about Rivers yesterday. We'll talk about Tolbert on Thursday when we break down the game against Oakland. But there was something else fascinating that we came across in the postmortem. And when we look up at this crowd of people in San Diego, once again we ask, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, the Chargers drew 68,908 fans on Sunday. That's the third largest crowd in team history. And of course, that makes some sense. You know, when the Super Bowl champs, the defending Super Bowl champs come to town, there's naturally going to be a draw for the home team. But it's one thing to come and watch a great opponent play your team. It's another matter entirely when the fans are coming to root for your opponent. And that's exactly what happened in San Diego this past week. And if you were watching the game, you honestly could not tell where it was being played in the fourth quarter of that ballgame. If anything, during crunch time, it felt more like Lambeau Field than it did Qualcomm. The Chargers had to start going on silent counts because of the noise that all the Packer fans in their stadium were making. How about this one from Aaron Rodgers? Here's a nice quote. Quote, "The crowd was incredible. When we ran on the field the first time, the crowd was going crazy. When you're on the road, you're up by 7, and it's late in the game, and they have to go on a silent count, that's pretty impressive. So I have to give a lot of credit to our fans. They travel well, and that says a lot about the kind of fans that we have." And here's another quote from the tight end, JerMichael Finley. Quote, "Today did feel like a home game. The Pack Nation showed their support here. It was crazy. It was just Lambo in the West." So for all of those visions of, you know, these big Packer wins at Lambeau Field, consider this. In the Aaron Rodgers era, Green Bay 22-12 ATS away from home. Of course, they went to the playoff. They went through the playoffs last year, earning victories on the highway, winning the Super Bowl, doing just this, going into hostile opposing stadiums and finding ways to win. 22-12 ATS, that's the best NFL road record during that span, and it definitely is something to factor into your power ratings moving forward.
When we come back, we're going to open up the mail, and yeah, Army-Navy is a month away, but it's not too early to tell you why that game already matters. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at Livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, time to answer those viewer emails. We've got a good one today from Pierce in Canada. Pierce says, "Hey, gentlemen, first off, excellent show. I love this Pierce guy. Cannot beat the quality of information coupled with the enthusiasm and laughs you guys provide. Laughs, the guy must have a sick sense of humor, clearly. Keep it up," Pierce says. But now we get to the question. Enough with the patting ourselves on the back. How important is it to get the best line, i.e. juice and points in your favor? Also, what are some of the ways you guys find the best lines? And if possible, can you recommend certain sports books to do so for us viewers that don't live in the sports betting capital of the world?
How important is that? Actually, it's critical. Changes a little bit over time, though, when you talk about finding the best lines. About 10 years ago, if we had a roundtable discussion, we throw this out there, that who would have a better chance to win? Me sitting here with all my handicapping abilities and one sports book to bet at, or my mother, who's never watched the game in her life, but she had 10 different books to shop from. 10 years ago, we would have said my mother. I actually would have had a better chance because that value in the marketplace of being able to shop around was going to give her a bigger edge over time. Now, here's the problem, and those of you who live in Nevada, you already know this. The consolidations have taken place. What are we down to today? Like 7 or 8 different books in the whole state?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it's, when you talk about large books, that'll take a reasonable size wager, yes. You
know. That's about, and it's only going to get worse. By next year, next football season, when William Hill is fully here, we may be down to maybe 5 different sets of lines in the entire state. Now, not only does that limit your shopping ability, but it also means they tend to copy each other a little bit more quickly. And that idea that you could lay 7.5 or take 9, now you could lay 7.5 or take 8. You're just not going to see the spread get very far away. So this is a topic we're going to revisit a lot over time. The value of shopping, just there isn't that much shopping room anymore. But in terms of impact on wagering, it's crucial. Now what we do is we wager all week long, starting Sunday night, right up to kickoff of the games. The best bet in our pockets at college football this week, Nevada over Hawaii. Is it the best bet now? No. You could have been out there laying a dozen yesterday. You've got to lay 14.5 now. So it's knowing how to time this in the scope. That's also something we'll talk about a lot over time. But Teddy, we have a problem with endorsements, don't we?
Yeah, we really do. And the issue, of course, when asking us to talk about some of the offshore sports books, and there are a number of good offshore sports books, very reputable offshore sports books. I hesitate to mention them on there for two reasons. Number one, in the state of Nevada, it is still technically illegal to place a wager across state lines, whether that's making a bet with someone in California or making a bet with someone in Costa Rica. So in theory, if I'm saying, yes, go to this sports book or that sports book offshore, I'm setting myself up for potential. It never happened, but I could set myself up as a target for prosecution. I would rather, you know, not hang out with Jerry Sandusky in federal prison. The other issue, of course, is that when it comes to the offshore industry, as we saw in the poker world, you know, when all of a sudden Full Tilt and Poker Stars are going down like that, you know, Absolute Poker, Ultimate Bet, all down in the blink of an eye, and guys who are icons in the industry, your Jesus Fergusons and Howard Letterers, becoming pariahs overnight because of their decision to affiliate themselves with sports books that are poker sites that weren't necessarily quite living up to those recommendations. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to say, yeah, go here, and then that site shuts down for whatever reason, and then you guys come back to me and say, Teddy, bad recommendation. You just cost me $100K. The goal is not to do that, and that means that when it comes to issuing public recommendations, it's just something that we can't do. Privately, happy to talk to you, happy to answer emails in that regard, but publicly, on air, we just can't do it. But bottom line is, it's time to go inside the numbers. Great question, Pierce. Thanks for asking. But Dave, now it's time for you and your Cracker Jack research staff to tell us what they've come up with for Inside the Numbers on Tuesday.
And of course, even though we can't do specific offshore endorsements, you always want to deal with the best. So look for places that are like the pinnacle of the industry. You know, let's see someone tie that back. Army-Navy play in December. That's plenty of time away. So if you want to start warming up for that, go to the library or even go to Amazon.com or somewhere and order A Civil War by John Feinstein. Terrific book about this series and tells you something about this particular matchup that okay, ESPN's got a documentary tonight on Auburn, Alabama, which some people think is the most fierce rivalry in college football. I don't think it is. I think it's Army-Navy because it goes so far beyond football. Why are we talking about this game now? We're going to tie a couple of things in. On this show a lot, we'll talk about why the Service Academy teams are so good as road underdogs. It's that discipline, that competitive fire that they bring, that they can overcome challenges against superior opponents. Navy has particularly been good in this role. But we go inside the numbers for Tuesday. Take a look at not only how well Navy has done in the role since 2000, 33-18 against the spread. That is terrific over 51 samples. That's as a road underdog for the last 11 seasons. But take a look at the last four games of the season in that span. They've been a road underdog nine times, a perfect 9-0. Why does that happen? Because Army-Navy's coming up, and you start sharpening your team right now. You're working to get to your peak. Your whole season builds around being at your best when you play Army. So they might think, oh, Navy will be flat at SMU this week. No, you're practicing and playing for Army right now. That's why they've held up so well in this role late in the season.
When we come back, it's time to go in. Oh, no, we just did the inside the numbers. Time to go for our Insider Six-Pack. I got a lot of push-ups to do at the end of the show. I can tell already. Of course, push-ups, when we make mistakes. I had a bunch yesterday. I got a bunch more today. We're coming right back with Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's time for our Insider Six-Pack. We give you six chunks of knowledge for the upcoming football weekend, and we're going to start with maybe the biggest game of the upcoming weekend in the college variety, and that, of course, being Stanford versus Oregon. Huge injury concerns for the Stanford Cardinal in terms of their receiving core right now. So the biggest challenge of the regular season so far, Stanford's been a double-digit favorite in every game they've played so far this year, not this week, as Oregon coming to Palo Alto, and the wide receiver, Chris Owusu, their leading returning receiver coming into the season and arguably their best downfield threat. He just suffered his second concussion in the last 3 weeks. He was taken off the field on a stretcher. It's big concern whether Owusu is going to be able to go tonight. It has to be considered doubtful for this point. Here's the quote from head coach David Shaw talking about keeping academics and health in perspective when it comes to playing for a national championship. Quote, there are a lot of checks he's got to pass in order to get back on the field, and we're going to make sure that he passes all of those before he plays. So we will play overly cautious. I'll tell you that. We'll be overly cautious with Chris. Owusu's injury is only one of several that can impact the Cardinal this week. A couple of key cogs in the nation's best tight end rotation also questionable at best. Yeah, they're going to have Kobe Fleener in the lineup. He's a poor man's Rob Gronkowski. But we don't know if they're going to have Levine Tuilolo or Zach Ertz, both of whom are questionable this weekend. So those two have combined for 35 receptions so far this season, and it's possible that of the seven Cardinal receivers who have at least 10 catches so far this season, three of them won't be on the field against Oregon on Saturday.
Yesterday we noted several college games that had not been posted yet. We've got one more we can add today. North Texas, no line yet for this week. They're saying it's because of the concussion suffered by Derek Thompson, their starting quarterback against Arkansas State in the last game. Thompson is back and practicing now, but we're not sure he gets the call this week anyway. Andrew McNulty, a promising freshman, considered the prize recruit for Dan McCarney in his first recruiting class at Denton. McNulty has played pretty well when he's had his opportunities too. There's a chance that the job might be thrown open this week in practice. Here's part of the thinking. They think they can build around McNulty. The rest of the season actually lays out pretty well. After this week, you get a home game against Western Kentucky, a bye, and a home game against Middle Tennessee. That's not a bad way to break in a freshman quarterback to get him ready for next year.
We can't say that it's gone from bad to worse for Indy, because that's kind of understating what's going on with the Colts right now. It has gone from disastrous to catastrophic for Indy over the course of the last couple of weeks. And, of course, this is a team that is actually built to lose the turnover battle every single week. You look at a defense that isn't forcing any turnovers, one turnover created in the last six games for that Colts defense because of the read-and-react style, the cover-two style they're playing right now. And, of course, offensively, when you have a quarterback like Curtis Painter who is clearly going through some growing pains and also playing from behind, you're going to see the offense continuing to commit turnovers, the defense continuing not to force any. So the Colts, this catastrophic run, don't know that it's going to end anytime soon. And, of course, it's going to go get worse this week. Now, Dallas Clark could be lost for the remainder of the season. Another key cog in the tight end rotation, Brody Eldridge, may not be able to play this week. So, you know, Clark's leadership was something they were going to need going down the stretch of this dismal campaign. And there are a lot of signs here that the fires are already flickering out. Outscored 75-14 in the first quarter. In the first half of the last three games. 75-14 by halftime. So blowout loss for Indy. Right now, Jacob Tam, the only tight end left on the roster to bolster the position. They did sign Anthony Hill off the Eagles practice squad on Monday.
Bad news in Tampa Bay. Gerald McCoy, starting defensive tackle, was the number three pick in the NFL draft. Suffered a torn biceps. He's going to be gone for the season. That's a big blow for Tampa Bay, not only because of the abilities of McCoy, but how far the drop-down is to the next players in the rotation. We'll let Coach Raheem Morris tell you how much he believes it means. He says, you can see the difference in our play up front when he's out of the game and how it affects our get-off and some of the things we're able to do positively on defense. He makes game plans change. Here's a big part of why. The only defensive tackles left on the roster right now, Brian Prince and Roy Miller, they will be actively shopping in the free agent market in the next 48 hours. They will sign at least one player this week.
Yeah, and of course, VORP, the concept of value over replacement player, something we think a lot about in terms of the advanced metrics in baseball and basketball. In this instance for football, the injury for McCoy really matters. And if you watch that Bucs defense without him on the field against New Orleans last week, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Let's talk about the Detroit Lions. They were very active during the bye week. About two dozen different players brought in for auditions. Detroit's thinking about setting up their roster for the playoffs now, which is something they haven't done in the Motor City for, a decade plus. Many of these two dozen players that came in were at the running back position. Obviously, they lost Mikel LeShure in training camp. He was expected to be a big impact player in that offense. Javid Best also not healthy. So without those two guys, the rotation's been thin all years. They moved forward. They went back to the past, brought in Kevin Smith, who had modest success here in 2008 and 2009, 976 yards on the ground in 08, 747 in 09, before injuries really started to derail his career. And now Smith back in the fold for Detroit. But forget the running back position. The key signing this past weekend may well be Leonard Davis, a three-time Pro Bowler who's played left tackle for many years. And Davis didn't find a spot, on an NFL roster after getting cut in Dallas this past August. But he's the type of veteran presence who could really help a team in the postseason. Even though he may not be a full-time player in Detroit, he certainly can be a valuable asset for a half season for a team planning on making an extended run in the month of January.
But had a chance to be an explosive Dallas offense has been muddled all season. There's only been one game where they have the full complement of skill players all healthy. That may be all there's going to be the entire way. Miles Austin is having another solid season for them. Injured, going to be out for at least the next three games. They figure he will not play all the way through the Thanksgiving game against Miami. Replacing him, Laurent Robinson, who's been having a decent year, but the problem is when Robinson steps up, you don't have that next player in line. Their three wide receiver sets aren't nearly as effective now, and the depth also becomes an issue that curtails a lot of that Dallas playbook, still dealing with an injured Felix Jones as well.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
Hey, I'm Al Mann.
Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it?
Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all of your key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. And of course, yesterday I didn't say that. That meant push-ups after the show. Tired of push-ups. No more push-ups. So we're going to make sure our sponsor knows that we're giving out the information. Check out Covers.com right now. All right. Let's go to the Glass Bowl in Toledo. It's Money Time Max style right now. The Rockets, 12.5-point home chalk, totaling that ballgame, sitting around 68 with fair weather expected at the Glass Bowl this evening.
Couple of interesting dynamics at play here. If you remember back to last Tuesday's show, we called for a Toledo over against Northern Illinois. The game sailed. The losing team that night had 60 points. But that losing team was Toledo. And there was a big brouhaha in the aftermath concerning Tim Beckman's clock management. Toledo took the lead 60-56. Northern Illinois got what appeared to be their final possession with 4 minutes and 16 seconds left. And they did what they had done all night, pretty much just mashed their way down the field, scoring what turned out to be the winning touchdown with 19 seconds left. Why did it get all the way down to 19? Beckman sat on all three of the Toledo timeouts on that drive, not giving his team any time to come back on their final possession. When Toledo did get the ball with 19 seconds left, they completed a couple of passes. They crossed midfield. They used two of their timeouts finally, but it was too late. Beckman came under a lot of criticism during the week. Now the question is, do the players have the trust in the coach when it looks like the coach's decision might have cost them that game?
Yeah, I have to read this quote from Tim Beckman because I think it speaks volumes about his mentality going into this ballgame. Quote, "It's pretty hard when you're standing there with 18 to 21-year-olds preaching to them about making sure they're doing their responsibilities right on and off the football field and then say to them, hey, why don't you guys give up a touchdown so we can get the ball back earlier? That's not going to happen when I'm a football coach." The other thing that he said that kind of stands out, you know, which is fine. That all makes sense. Hey, Beckman, what about using those timeouts? Beckman, quote, "I had confidence in our defense." Of course, this was a Toledo defense that for the night allowed 8.6 yards per play. So 8.6 yards per play is pretty high. You know, we talk about a good defensive performance. We're talking about 3, 4, 5 yards a play. We talk about average, 6 yards per play. And, you know, we talk about bad, 8.6 yards per play. That means they're getting they're second and 1.5 every time they snap the ball. Obviously, Toledo's defense was no good last week. Not convinced it's going to be any better here against an explosive Western Michigan passing game.
Yeah, you've got a lot of big play potential from both sides here. Toledo has that great dynamic 1-2 quarterback combination where you literally don't lose anything, no matter who's in the game. That's difficult for opposing teams to prepare for. You probably haven't had a chance to see Western Michigan play yet. You can see Alex Carter, a quarterback who will be an NFL draft pick, and a guy just putting up such terrific, terrific numbers at wide receiver. Jordan White's already got 95 catches this year. He'll go over 100 tonight. Big challenge for Toledo in the secondary. One of the things that hurt them last week, Charles Ransifer, who plays what they call their star position, a combination safety linebacker, still under suspension. They tried to patch things together last week unsuccessfully. Now they're shuffling that secondary for tonight's matchup. Dante Morrow moves from safety into the star. Desmond Morrow goes from cornerback to safety, and that means freshman Keith Suggs now becomes a starting cornerback. But when you're juggling your defense this late in the season against a good passing attack, not going to be easy to make stops. So does it sound, Teddy, like we're going in the same direction that we did a week ago?
It certainly sounds that way. And, of course, when we talk about this Western Michigan passing attack, they have shown home road dichotomy. You know, they've really scored points in bunches at home, including 45 last week against Ball State. On the highway, they have not had similar success. But the last two times the Broncos have played in the Glass Bowl, well, they scored in the 40s one time, in the 50s the other. And, of course, that is going to set us up for the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Tuesday. We're going to do exactly what we did last week. Except for that, we have a little bit of a different team. Instead of Toledo facing Northern Illinois this time, Toledo's facing Western Michigan. We're going to take the same game, Toledo over the total. 68's the number. You can get that right now, even at 67.5 out there at a key precinct if you want to shop around. Toledo over the total. That's the play of the day for Tuesday. And that's going to wrap it up for our Tuesday edition of Vegas Sports Day. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.